Hello and welcome to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor with McLean's Magazine.
Just weeks after winning the election, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is attending his first leaders' summits with the G20 meeting in Turkey, followed by the APEC conference in the Philippines. To discuss the advantages and challenges of Trudeau's international debut, we're joined by former diplomat Colin Robertson.
One of the big topics at these summits will be the Syrian refugee crisis, and the Liberal government says its plan to bring 25,000 refugees to Canada will be unveiled in the coming days. To discuss the process of making this happen, we're joined by Immigration Minister John McCallum.
The Prime Minister has announced he'll be holding his first meeting with the Premiers on November 23rd, just days before they all head off to a major international climate change conference. The McLean's panel discusses the meeting, and it weighs in on Trudeau's first official week in office.
And it's not just Prime Minister Trudeau who is in the spotlight, but also his wife, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau. She's being noticed for her style, with some comparing her to the Duchess of Cambridge, Kate Middleton. We speak with fashion blogger Anita Clark.
For your politics, for your power, welcome to The Hill. This weekend will be Justin Trudeau's coming out party on the world stage. Trudeau officially became Prime Minister just last week at a swearing-in ceremony at Rideau Hall, and he's already making his international debut, taking off to Turkey for his first G20 summit this weekend, and then early next week he'll be in the Philippines for the APEC conference.
Trudeau says one focus for him will be the global economy.
We need to be investing in our country's future. We need to be investing in the kinds of opportunities that are going to allow us to grow and continue to flourish as nations. That's going to be at the center of my discussions with my colleagues around the world.
But Canada will also be front and center in discussions about the Syrian refugee crisis. Prime Minister Trudeau says with his goal of bringing 25,000 refugees to our country by the end of the year, he wants to demonstrate to other leaders that this shouldn't be viewed only as a challenge, but also an opportunity.
A way of not just helping people in dire need of being helped, but also contributing to economic growth in our home countries by bringing families and individuals willing to work and build and contribute fully as members of our society.
To talk more about Trudeau's first overseas trip as PM and what he needs to achieve at these meetings, I'm joined by Colin Robertson, a former diplomat who spent more than three decades in the Foreign Service and is now the Vice President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute. I guess first off, I mean, Trudeau is entering these two major leaders' summits shortly after taking over his new position as prime minister, but he also has these goals of tackling climate change, bringing in 25,000 Syrian refugees, altering our mission against ISIS, promoting investment in the not only local economy, but global economy, instead of actually austerity, which has been the term used for many years now since the global recession. How will this all play with the other world leaders?
Well, as you say, he's got an ambitious agenda. He's taking a deep plunge into international summitry over the next month. And really, what he should be trying to get out of this would be to enlarge his personal network of leaders so that when he talks to them by telephone, he already has their measure. They will be very interested in him. Justin Trudeau has extraordinary international curiosity value, but they'll want to determine what he's about. So from his perspective, take advantage of that factor of interest to meet and, importantly, listen and learn from the other leaders. No one will be expecting him to come forward with bold new initiatives. He has, as you point out, we've got a Canadian agenda, and on the international sphere, he's declared he wants to signal Canada's back internationally. Just by being at these summits, he's already demonstrating that Canada is back internationally.
In your experience on the international stage, what will it be like? Take us inside there. Are they honest and frank discussions? Do they get heated? Or is it much like what we see on TV, where it's a lot of talking points after a lot of work done by bureaucrats?
Cormac, it's a bit, think of a four-ring circus. In the outer ring are the media and NGOs and others who are trying to have influence. All right, this is a great throng. The next level of ring in would be the officials that are supporting the leaders, and there's a whole gaggle of them. And the next room would be the immediate advisors to the leaders. And these are the people that really often prepare the way for the deals that need to be cut in that very center ring, which is the leaders themselves. Now, in many cases, the leaders are allowed to be there with one or two advisors. But again, a Canadian innovation, one that Pierre Trudeau had introduced back at early G7s, was that there would be an opportunity for the leaders themselves, just they alone, to get together in a room. And in those situations, I am told that conversations are very frank, because the leaders will come out and usually tell you, here's what we'll discuss, and then you'll talk to your counterparts who work for the other leaders, and you'll exchange notes, because you want to have a sense of what they actually talked about. But at those at the very top level, it is simply a room of conversation by the leaders themselves.
We know that the global economy is going to be one of the issues that is brought up. But in terms of focus, probably more of a media focus anyway, the Syrian refugee crisis will be a big topic of discussion. How key are these meetings to what the Liberals have planned? They want to bring in 25,000 refugees, but, the other part of this crisis is the mission against ISIS, which the Liberals want to pull back from. So how key will these meetings be to achieving those goals for the Liberal government?
It's a change of government doesn't change how the civil service has been working with their counterparts. And Canada has a long history of refugee resettlement. So we will have been working over the past years and months with the various refugee resettlement groups in the Middle East and those who bring them here. So that's not particularly new. But what is new is that the government has put a high priority in this, and so there will be additional resources reflecting where the new government has placed its priorities to get this done. In terms of meeting with interlocutors, they too will be interested in what they could do to help. Turkey, for example, where the G20 conference is being held, they have a big problem. They've got 2 million refugees, 2 million plus, and being added to daily. So they're looking for both help domestically, and that's where Canada may say, well, we're pretty good at peace operations, and that's almost what you need in these camps. Policing and things, we've said we're pulling our CF-18s out, but in terms of the ISIS mission, which is at the heart of the matter, we'll prepare to help. And again, peace operations is something we can be doing. We can be helpful on the logistics side, communication side, training of police. This is what the United States is looking for. In a sense, rotating out the CF-18s, which were highly visible, but in some sense ornamental, because of the thrust of that is being handled by the United States, that won't be an issue. And it certainly isn't going to, there's no surprise to the Americans.
We know that Trudeau has spoken to U.S. President Barack Obama on the phone after his election, but he will be having his first face-to-face with Barack Obama at the APEC conference. What will that mean for U.S.-Canada relations and the mission against ISIS?
I'd be surprised, in fact, if the ISIS was the top agenda when they meet in APEC. My bet is that they're going to probably talk about climate, because that's certainly a high priority for President Obama, and what Canada can do to perhaps align itself more closely with a North American approach on climate, because I think they're going to find convergence. And I think that's a higher priority for Mr. Obama right now.
So let me ask it this way then. It was clear that at least towards the end of Prime Minister Harper's administration that relations with the U.S. were not exactly as warm as they had been in years past. Do you think that this meeting, this face-to-face meeting between Obama and Trudeau, may go a long way in trying to improve relations with the U.S.?
Yes, I do. It's a new page. It's a new leader. And I'm convinced on the American side, they want to have a positive relationship with the new government in Canada. And Mr. Obama, even though he's in his last year, there are things he would like to do, and there are things we want Mr. Obama to do. We still need to get, as the American economy recovers, our economy recovers, but we need to be able to get our people and goods across the border as efficiently as possible. And this was a project Mr. Harper had started, but one that needs reinvigoration.
What will be the biggest challenges for Trudeau heading into these leaders' meetings?
Well, he's shown himself extremely skilled at meeting people for the first time. He's very personable. So in that sense, that's usually the biggest challenge, is you're going into a room of people that are highly experienced. It's like joining a class halfway through the session, where they all have much higher knowledge and experience than you have. You're the new person on the block. And so that can be daunting. But my sense is that Mr. Trudeau, from just watching him, this is something he'll handle very well.
May there be policy challenges, though, that he will face?
Oh, inevitably. There will be policy differences, but I don't think anybody's expecting him to pronounce at this point. We're not bringing any major policy forward. We're simply there to listen and react. And remember, for all of these meetings, there's been a lot of work done by the civil service, so there's a Canadian positions, or Canadian are already outlined.
Are there any leaders he may clash with?
Cormac, everybody's human. You cannot predict, but at these kinds of meetings, international leaders are usually on their best behavior, because nobody wants to be seen to be kind of dog in the manger or the gadfly.
So it's not like he's going to be saying fuddle-duddled to another world leader or anything like that.
It would be highly unlikely.
That was former diplomat Colin Robertson, who's now with the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, discussing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's first overseas trip to the G20 summit and the APEC conference.
Still to come on the show, Immigration Minister John McCallum is here to discuss the government's plan to bring 25,000 Syrian refugees to Canada. The McLean's panel discusses Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's first meeting with the premiers, and we find out why Sophie Grégoire Trudeau's style is stealing the spotlight.
Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor with McLean's Magazine.
Coming up on the show, the McLean's panel discusses Trudeau's first meeting with the premiers ahead of a major climate change conference, and we delve into political style, figuring out why the fashion world has its eyes on the PM's wife, Sophie Grégoire Trudeau. But first,
the toughest early challenge for the Trudeau government will be making good on the Liberal campaign commitment to bring 25,000 Syrian refugees to Canada by the end of this year. On Thursday, this issue was the main topic of discussion during a three-hour cabinet meeting chaired by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. The government did not release its detailed plan, but it did promise to unveil the logistics in the coming days.
While we don't have a blueprint just yet, we are getting many hints. The Chief of Defense Staff was at the cabinet meeting, suggesting there's a good chance military planes and bases will be used for transportation and temporary housing. We know the private sector will be involved, and Air Canada has already offered its help, and provinces and cities are in talks to help with resettlement. The new Public Safety Minister, Ralph Goodale, also says he's confident proper security checks can be completed.
On the basis of the advice that I've received from my officials and from the critical departments that are involved, which of course would be CBSA and CSIS, they believe they can conduct the necessary work within the project proposal that's being put forward.
But the person put at the center of this massive task is the Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship, John McCallum. McCallum is a former bank economist and was defense minister under former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. Earlier this week, he spoke with McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes, who started by asking McCallum about a special cabinet committee set up to tackle the Syrian refugee challenge.
Many of the cabinet members on that committee, including myself, have already been working very hard throughout the day ever since we became ministers, which is less than a week ago. Mm. So we've already done a lot of work. The public service has already done a lot of work. But if you look at the portfolios of the members of this committee, you'll see that each of them has a role. Like Stéphane Dion on foreign affairs, we have to deal with the governments of Lebanon and Jordan and Turkey, where many of the refugees are, and go through the list. So each of us is doing our own work independently, but it is always good to come together and make sure that we are all working appropriately as a single team. And when you get all the players in one room, that helps. So the committee will certainly help to expedite things, make things move faster, but The committee is not the only place where work happens. Mm. Each of us is working every day with our own officials to push this project forward.
Could I ask, when you got this job, when you walk into the room with your officials, is their first way of dealing with you to say, here's how we can make this commitment happen, Minister? Or is their first response to say to you, here are the hurdles and challenges we're facing in trying to make this happen?
Their first task is to show me a path to make it happen. But, as I have said, we also are determined to do it not only quickly, but to do it well with regard to health and security concerns. So they present to me a path that will make it happen, but they clearly as well identify the risks associated with any action. So any kind of project of this kind is in part an exercise in risk management. You have targets you want to hit, but there are certain risks that have to be considered and mitigated.
I've talked to people outside the government but who have some expertise who say, hey, this is possible, it's doable, but it's only doable if you, they didn't use these words, but if you cut some corners, if you try to do some things very quickly. Are you in a position to tell us right now whether you've figured out to your own satisfaction whether the end of this year commitment can be made without cutting too many corners?
Well, that's what I am working on, and that's what the committee is working on. I would not say cutting corners. That means doing things in a slipshod way. We're determined to move fast, but we also have to do it right. Now, sometimes you can do things in a faster than normal way and still get it right. And if that's the case, we'll do it. But we're not going to sacrifice things that are important, such as security concerns and health concerns.
So if those things become insurmountable, then you push back the deadline?
Well, this is what we're working on. We are adhering to the deadline, but we're determined to do it in a way that satisfies those concerns.
Minister, as I've called around to people about your appointment, I've talked to a few people who knew your work as your party's critic on this file when you were in opposition are not that surprised that you got the job, but people only know the briefer shorthand on you, which is former Royal Bank of Canada chief economist becomes politician, they think of you as an economic policy guy. And a couple of people have asked me flat out, why is this guy who's mostly an economic policy guy in this particular job? If someone asked you that question that way, how would you answer it?
Well, the short answer is because that's what the Prime Minister asked
you. Okay.
But a broader answer would be that, you know, yes, my background is in economics, but my other biggest job in government was defense minister, so you could have been equally surprised at that. Mm. I think, in terms of immigration, I think that partly it is my experience as immigration critic, where I've been immersed in immigration for quite some time, and partly I think it's my writing is a good reason. Because Markham, according to StatsCan, is the most diverse city in Canada. Hmm. But immigration is very much top of mind for my constituents. And close to 90% of the work done in my riding office is related to immigration. So I think I have a background in immigration, both because of my immigration portfolio and because of the hugely diverse nature of my riding.
Of course, we're thinking closely about the refugee thing. That's the most pressing file on your desk, but it's not going to be end of the road for you. What are you thinking about in terms of longer term, or at least not quite so immediate concerns for portfolio? Are there other major aims that you're starting to, at least in the periphery, turn your attention to?
Absolutely. We have a very major list of commitments in immigration. And the way I would put it overall is that we want to welcome newcomers with a smile. I'll leave it at that. I have sunny ways, so I won't say the alternative way of welcoming them. We want to welcome all newcomers with a smile. And so part of that, obviously and most pressingly, is that we want to welcome these 25,000 refugees quickly. Mm. We will very quickly reinstate the health care for refugees that the previous government took away. So that's another commitment in our platform, which will certainly happen soon. Mm. I mean, the judge said it was cruel and unusual and therefore illegal to deprive refugees of this care. And we, for many, many months, have thought it was a no-brainer in terms of the right thing to do. Mm. And also economically smart, because while the federal government might save money from depriving health care to refugees, the refugees who are very sick will go to emergencies and hospitals, and that'll end up costing more money for the taxpayer as a whole. Mm. So on refugees, we're going to be welcoming the ones from Syria and opening health care to refugees, as used to be the case. On family class, we are going to reduce processing times. We've committed more money with the department to achieve that. Those processing times have gone through the roof in many cases, and I see the consequences of that all the time in my writing office, where people are in tears or frustrated because they've been waiting months or even years.
Is this mostly on family reunification cases that you're referring there, like when you say the processing times are too long?
I referred to refugees, and now I'm referring to family unification.
Okay.
Not just parents, but also immediate husbands or wives or children. Mm. Even in those immediate cases, the time taken has gone through the roof. So we are going to be working really hard to bring those times down. That won't happen overnight, but we will work very hard to make those times come down over time.
That was Immigration Minister John McCallum in conversation with Maclean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes.
Still to come, the Maclean's panel looks at Trudeau's first official week in office, as well as his upcoming first meeting with provincial premiers, and we find out why the fashion world has its eyes on Sophie Gregoire Trudeau. Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill.
It's now time for the Maclean's panel. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Aaron Wary, Maclean's Associate Editor, and Maclean's Political Editor, Paul Wells. Thanks very much for being here, guys.
Hi.
First off, let's talk about Justin Trudeau's first official week in the job as Prime Minister. Paul, what did you think of his first week? Any pros, cons out of your observations?
Well, quite a bit closer to the ground, eh? I mean, there was less ceremonial stuff and a lot more operational stuff. Cabinet committee meetings, clearly a mad scramble to bring together some semblance of a plan for bringing in tens of thousands of refugees on very short notice from a very troubled part of the world. And the beginning of a sense that not everything's going to be easy for this government. The environment minister had to approve dumping an awful lot of human waste into the St. Lawrence River. And then the transport minister said they're not going to allow jets to fly into the Toronto Island Airport, which jeopardizes Bombardier. Essentially, the transport minister had to announce to the world that there's two Liberal MPs in Toronto for every Liberal MP in Montreal, and that Toronto's going to win most of those fights. It's starting to get a little harder for these guys.
Definitely, Aaron, they gave the impression that they're getting right down to work, and that's sort of the image that they wanted to set, and they are dealing with these issues. The ministers are a little bit more open. What do you think on the fact? Can they keep that up? Is that something that they're going to continue to do and we'll continue to see over the months ahead?
It's very difficult to predict, only because it's very easy to be open and talkative and happy to meet the media when you haven't yet really had to do much. The small decisions are starting to be made, as Paul points out, the sewage dump, not that it's a small decision, but it's a, you know, those decisions are starting, but the real serious stuff that could conceivably get the Conservatives and the New Democrats and various columnists really upset, it hasn't really been done yet. It is interesting to watch this government get going, to watch it try to show how different it is, to watch it be received differently in the case of what happened at Foreign Affairs with the public servants cheering on Mr. Dion and Mr. Trudeau. It's been a generally speaking, a good first week, which, you know, should probably be the kind of baseline. You should have a good first week. And if you don't have a good first week, then you must have been trying really hard to screw it up.
Do you think all of this will change come December 3rd when Parliament resumes and we don't have this this schedule where, you know, ministers are getting their offices in order, but they don't have parliamentary duties to attend to?
In a lot of ways, I think it will actually run much more smoothly for a while. By a month from now, they're likely to have staffs who can handle a lot of the routine. There's likely to be settled into some patterns around here. And the opposition will be pushing back, and the opposition will have plenty of things to legitimately criticize. But I think they'll also have at the back of their mind some of the polls that we've seen in this week, which show that a lot of people who didn't vote Liberal are fine with the fact that there's a Liberal government. It's not just that the complacent media has a honeymoon with this government. It's that a lot of Canadians are as with any new government, are willing to let this government have its lead for a while and show what it can do. They'll worry about consequences later. They will. And so especially with the NDP, which had a lot of voters who were who could have voted Liberal under other circumstances, but even to some extent with the Conservatives, if they're too harsh, too fast on a new government, they risk a backlash among their own supporters.
When do you think the honeymoon will actually end, Aaron?
I think it could be a while yet. I think, as Paul points out, Mr. Trudeau is rather popular at the moment. I think one of the underlying things with Trudeau that rings true to me that I had been suggested at one point was that people wanted to see him succeed. I think that has to be taken into account. I think there is a fair amount of hope that he will turn out to be a decent prime minister. I don't know if people are imagining utopia or anything, but I think there's a general feeling of wanting to see this work out. And the opposition parties are still sorting themselves out. There's inevitably going to be some ministerial screw-up or scandal or obvious mistake, and that may ruin everything, or at least sort of bring us back to sort of the normal grind. But failing that, I don't know what breaks it. Even if they have to sort of backtrack on some of their promises, like Syrian refugees, I think there's probably a fair amount of capacity right now for people to forgive.
And what about the economic situation? The PBO put out a report that wasn't too rosy. In fact, they said that in the last 6 months, the outlook has deteriorated significantly. Bill Morneau, the new finance minister, came out and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to be releasing a fiscal update. And we heard from Scott Bryson that classic thing that incoming governments do all the time. Hey, the cupboards are bare. Things are way worse than we thought. It's the old regime that left us nothing to work with here. Paul, do you think that might throw this new Liberal government off track a little bit?
Not that much, because they benefit in this from something that their predecessors used to do. Stephen Harper finally realized at some point that if you spend $10 billion at a problem, you don't get 100 times more thanks from Canadians than if you spend $100 million on it, that Canadians don't notice decimal places very much. And so incremental spending in key areas will be all that this government needs in the first year or so to demonstrate that it has priorities, that it has things it cares about. So say one of the things in Melanie Joly's mandate letter, she's the new heritage minister, is that she's supposed to double funding to the Canada Council. It's about $1 billion. If she were to announce that she's going to do it starting 3 years from now over a decade, that means, you know, it's essentially some other government's problem down the road. She would probably still get a very nice thank you letter from the Canada Council. So as long as you're sort of slowly heading in the right direction, what Stephen Harper found is that counts for as much as if you were to do everything in the first day.
But Aaron, could this throw off certain plans such as balancing the budget by 2019 or going deeper into deficit than first thought? And could they be open to criticism as a result?
I think in the short term, it's not a huge problem for them. I think it's actually more interesting to wonder about the counterfactual, which is what would the NDP and the Conservatives be doing right now to fulfill their commitment of balancing the budget? So the Liberals have already kind of given themselves an out there. That's in the short term. Now, if they have to go into the next election with a balanced budget, that gets a bit more interesting. You know, as they look at the books, as they see the shape of things, do they suddenly decide, or is it suddenly brought to their attention that there's serious problems that need to be addressed with more money? And that gets us back to something that our colleague Stephen Gordon has focused on, which is the idea that Stephen Harper has very carefully, or did very carefully, take a lot of money out of the federal government, and going forward, any government was going to be somewhat bound by the restrictions he'd put on the government. So I think that if there's going to be a reckoning here, I think it's you know, 3 or 4 years away. In the short term, they're probably fine.
Okay, we also have Prime Minister Trudeau announcing this week that he is going to be having his first sit-down meeting with the premiers, something that hasn't happened in a little while, with the PM having a first minister's meeting. I believe it's November 23rd where he's going to be doing that. Paul, what are the challenges for Trudeau sitting down with the premiers, or do you think they might give him a bit of a softer ride on this one? The focus clearly on the climate change issue, given the fact they're inviting in some top scientists.
Well, it'll probably be a pretty soft meeting. It'll be a get-to-know-you session, and they're going to be preparing to go, most of them, to Paris for this climate conference. You don't want to poison that by being acrimonious before you even get on the plane. Sooner or later, though, there's going to be some hard questions asked. I've never understood how Trudeau's plan for a sort of a climate fund to help provinces reach their target would work. I'll go further. I'm quite sure it won't ever work. And once the provinces figure that out, once Alberta realizes that there's a good chance of a lot of this money going to Quebec, even though Quebec has waterfalls and has a far better source of clean energy than Alberta could ever hope for, that might be a source of resentment for Alberta. If Quebec were to see that this money from a federal climate fund is going to Alberta, even though Alberta has the worst climate record in the country, that might be a source of resentment for Quebec. I don't believe it's possible to send that money anywhere without making someone very upset. And we're going to see the beginnings of that dynamic at this meeting, at this first minister's meeting.
It's always a difficult dance with the premiers. But what does Trudeau have to do, Aaron, to try and make sure that he has a more constructive relationship with the premiers moving forward?
Well, I mean, it's you know, the Conservatives might argue that they had a constructive relationship. It just wasn't a very, you know, frequent relationship. You know, Justin Trudeau gets to show that he's willing to sit down with the premiers and discuss things and debate things. I think this is sort of the initial move. It's already being kind of clarified for everyone that we're not going to see targets coming out of this meeting. That will come in a few months. And that's where the real trouble starts. There's a fun interview that Stephen Harper gave in 2007 when it seemed like he was on the verge of announcing very serious climate policy, in which he said that, you know, no matter what you do here, the environmental groups are going to say you're not doing enough, and business is going to say you're doing too much, and there's going to be all this complaining, but you've just got to do it, and you can't just keep consulting, and you can't just keep making plans. And, of course, we saw what happened in that case, that he didn't ever kind of get around to doing that big plan. And now Trudeau faces the exact same situation. So he's kind of got a choice. He can not do much and try to skate by that way, or he can try to do something and deal with the inevitable conflict that comes with that. You know, it may be, if he can do it early enough in his mandate, he may have enough political capital to invest in that. But it's that, when you talk about the honeymoon possibly being over, there's a moment where we will find out sort of how this government is actually going to behave.
And an interesting little tidbit, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if the Liberals win in Newfoundland, there will be no provincial government in Canada with Conservative in its name. Yeah. And if that happens, is this a sign of a cultural shift in Canada that may benefit the new federal government?
I think it's a passing thing. I remember at one point when we had a Liberal prime minister and almost no Liberal party governments in the country. But it's a real thing. First of all, it suggests that voters are unwilling to put all their eggs in one basket. Secondly, at a less sort of rational master planning level, that voters take out their resentments against the federal government, against provincial parties that often have very little to do with what the federal government is doing. But it does help the new prime minister. I mean, not only is Kathleen Wynne, the premier of Ontario, coincidentally a liberal, she has a strong personal stake in this guy's success. I was astonished in August when I went to interview her about Justin Trudeau, and I saw that she had a poster of her and Justin Trudeau in her office. His success is going to be a part of her legacy, and his failure is going to be a weight on her if he fails. So it's handy to have a few faces like that around the cabinet, around the intergovernmental table.
Aaron, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple things. First, it helps Trudeau up until the point where one of those provincial governments becomes a drag on his party brand. But that said, I think it is worth reflecting on the fact that 4 years ago, after the 2011 election, the idea kind of came to the fore that the Liberal brand was dead or dying. And this party was a 20th century relic. And that seems rather not the case now. We've got many years left in this century to see how it plays out, but the resurgence of the Liberal Party over the last 4 years is a rather impressive thing.
All right, thanks very much, guys. Maclean's political editor, Paul Wells, Maclean's associate editor, Aaron Wary, and I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
Coming up after the break, we find out why the fashion world has its eyes on Sophie Gregoire Trudeau.
Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor with Maclean's Magazine.
When Justin Trudeau was sworn in as Prime Minister last week, the eyes of many Canadians shifted towards his wife, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau. As Canada's new PM is making waves in the political world, his spouse is getting a lot of attention in the fashion world.
Gregoire Trudeau studied commerce and communications in university, later becoming a radio and television host in Montreal who worked with several charities. Maclean's senior writer Laura Payton speaks with fashion blogger Anita Clark, who writes at the website I Want I Got, about Gregoire Trudeau's style and why it's not entirely a superficial topic.
So we're talking about Gregoire Trudeau's clothes so far. She's a very fashionable woman. What do you think so far about what she's been wearing for public appearances?
Honestly, it's kind of funny that I've been paying more attention to what our First Lady is wearing now. I find that she's very personable and compelling, so I was hoping to see her use Canadian fashion as a vehicle and kind of champion our design in her wardrobe choices, and I've been happy to see that's what she's sort of been striving for. So, and she's kind of been a little interesting in her choices also, especially on Remembrance Day. I really liked what she was wearing there, and it was very different from what I have seen other kind of political figures wear. She's not afraid to take chances with her wardrobe, which I'm really enjoying.
And so you talked a little bit about how you're hoping that she might wear some Canadian designers. What else do you expect to see out of her?
Well, obviously, I hope that she continues on with all her charity work and champions all the projects that she's interested in and that are important to her, as well as showcasing Canada on the larger scale of the world. Everyone seems to be interested in them right now. They're both attractive people that people like to look at, and I really hope that she pushes the Canadian design sort of in a Michelle Obama vein, where she's really been a champion of American designers. I'm hoping that she does the same thing for Canadian.
What do you think so far about our Prime Minister's fashion sense?
Oh, I've been looking through some of the photos and everything, and again, it's just fun. It seems like there's this brevity and lightness to how they dress. They don't seem to take it too seriously. They're not too stuffy about it. And it's such a change from the last 8 years, I guess, that everyone sort of, like, they make me smile when I see them.
What is it that they're communicating with the way that they dress?
I think, yeah, they just sort of bring a realness to their life, and it's sort of, you can relate to them a little more with the way they dress. It's not so political and straight-laced. They have fun with what they're wearing, and it just seems not as contrived as some political dress, and not afraid to push buttons necessarily, and show a bit of their personal style in their everyday life in office now.
It's interesting because that's certainly what Mr. Trudeau tries to convey when he's talking to people, right? He talks about being more authentic and more open, and then it sounds like that's reflected in what they're wearing.
Yes, definitely. I think so.
And, I mean, politicians do use stylists. We've already seen stories about Ms. Grégoire Trudeau using a stylist for her clothes. Is that, that all goes to selling a message, doesn't it?
Definitely. Like, a stylist definitely helps you pick clothes in a way that obviously projects a message if you're going to a stylist to use their services. And I don't fault them for that. They're on a big stage. Lots of people are paying attention to them. You want to make sure you look your best. And if you have a little help in that department, kudos. Like, I'm sure everyone would love to be able to, you know, have a personal stylist on their roster if they could.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that, you know, you can compare them to previous politicians. Lorraine Harper dressed quite well when she was living at 24 Sussex, but it was a different style. Can you talk a little bit about the difference?
Yeah, she is definitely more conservative, and for me personally, there's not much for me to grab onto and get excited about. Whereas Sophie, for me, there's so much potential for a lot of, I guess, high fashion moments that we could see down the road, and she just seems to have a more open mind with fashion and want to push the limits as much as you can in a political stage than just be your traditional conservative business suits every day or a nice dress kind of thing. She seems to want to show the playful side a bit more.
And which other Canadian designers would you like to see her in? We've seen her in the Centaller coat and in Erdem. He obviously is sort of...
Oh my God, there's so many. Like, would really love to see her in a Greta Constantine dress. I think that would be amazing. Their dresses look great on all different types of people, and they're colorful and very elegant. I would love to see her in something by them. Like, that would be my top choice, definitely Greta Constantine. The fashion industry is a major player economically, end of story. And our Canadian designers work hard. And I think that as representatives of the country, we should be showing the world all aspects of what we produce here. And everybody wears clothes. We want to look good. And I think that it's a great vehicle for people to learn more about Canadian design through our First Lady and what she's wearing.
Picking up on that, some people might say, well, it's kind of superficial to be talking about what Mrs. Grégoire Trudeau is wearing. What would you respond to that?
I kind of agree with it totally, and I kind of disagree also just because of the economic impact of the fashion industry and the fact that the media is always going to be looking for these kind of stories. You can't really get away from them. It would be nice if it was not important, but we're a visual species, and we take cues from what we see on people, what they're wearing, how their hair is done. Unfortunately, it's all part and parcel of, like, the human experience. And it's like a double-edged sword. You take the good and the bad with it.
That was Maclean senior writer Laura Payton speaking with fashion blogger Anita Clark. That's it for this week's episode.
For more of your politics and power, join us next week on The Hill.